This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of September 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 26th of September. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: 180 new homes spark backlash, helping people live a more independent life, and 1,000 free pizzas are up for grabs at Zizzy. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was 180 new homes spark backlash. Battle lines are being drawn over plans to build almost 200 homes in Hairstock. Bargate Homes has applied to Winchester City Council, WCC, for permission to construct up to 180 homes on land at Hairstock Corner, Salters Lane. The outline planning application also covers the provision of public open space, associated landscaping, drainage and infrastructure works, and the formation of a new access from Stockbridge Road. The site spans approximately 13 hectares and has frontage on Stockbridge Road, Salters Lane and Dean Lane. The planning statement written by Tor & Co. on behalf of Bargate Homes said, "Bargate's vision for the site is to create a sustainable community as an extension to the city, providing up to 180 homes in a development that is well connected to and integrated with the existing urban area. The development would assist in meeting local housing need and would be formed to provide a strong outer boundary to the city in this sustainable location." According to the planning statement, if approved, alongside the houses, the development will provide a new central road providing access from Stockbridge Road, a central neighbourhood green space designed for community use and play spaces. Improved pedestrian and cycle links will also be added to the site and surrounding areas. The application has already received objections from residents. Chris Solomides of Burley Road said, "In theory, this looks like a sensible development, though the plan is misleading as it does not show 180 houses. Our concern is that despite assertions that traffic management has been thought through, it is clear from closer reading of the documents that further traffic surveys are required." Will Goldsmith of Orient Drive said, "If this is to go ahead, then perhaps it is time to consider the junction of Stockbridge Road, Hairstock Road and Salters Lane. It is an increasingly busy crossroad which will only get worse with the Andover Road changes and the work on the M3. There have been accidents recently and it's just a matter of time before something serious happens." Speaking to the Chronicle, Nick Bruce of Salters Lane said, "I'm against it for many reasons and not just for being close to the development. It is building on green fields, which I don't think we should be doing at all. And it has been tried before. There were two applications in 2000 and 2002. They were both rejected. I think the reasons why they were rejected are still true. We do not want to see a sprawling Winchester building up to the villages. It would change the character of this very lovely lane forever, and it is not in the local plan."
Helping people live a more independent life. A mobility business celebrated its first anniversary of helping people with their independence in Winchester. Winchester Mobility held their birthday celebrations on Thursday, September the 18th, which welcomed the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, family members, regular customers and beneficiaries. Lee Coggan, owner of Winchester Mobility, began his business venture in September 2024 after gaining years of industry experience, which enabled him to set up the only shop of its kind in Winchester. Mr. Coggan reflected on the success of his business over the last year, highlighting the importance of having a shop situated in an area that isn't always easily accessible to those with mobility issues. He said, The year has flown and business has been great. It's so amazing to be able to help so many people in the Winchester area, and it's really rewarding job. I think it's vital that there is a mobility shop in this beautiful city, and it's been an amazing year. It's great to see so many people here today, and I thank them all for their support over the years as the years roll on to next year. The family-run mobility store based in Winnell, Eastern Lane, offers personalised care and affordable solutions when buying scooters, recliner chairs, rollators, canes and other mobility aids. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Akhwal, said it's really great to support a business like this and to see them doing so well. It is very important work that Winchester Mobility are doing, and it's fantastic to be here to help them celebrate a year of business. As a result of the recent growth of the business, Mr. Coggan decided to sponsor Winchester Walking Football Club with their new blue kit, now sporting the shop's logo. The idea came about after Mr. Coggan heard about the team during his Friday market stall at the city centre, and as a keen footballer, he decided to sport that, what he thought was a great cause. For more information on Winchester Mobility, visit winchestermobility.co.uk. And there's a lovely picture of 9 scooters with people sitting on them and vast array of people at the back, and also the mayor and the lady mayoress.
1,000 free pizzas are up for grabs at Zizi. A popular Italian restaurant in Winchester is celebrating its reopening with a major giveaway. Zizi, located at 57 High Street, reopened on Tuesday, September the 16th, following an extensive refurbishment, and is offering 1,000 free pizzas as part of the relaunch. The building was formerly known as the Hampshire Chronicle Office, which operated out of the premises from 1807 until 2004, when it moved to 5 Upper Brook Street. The restaurant now features a new look, including a vibrant mural by artist Ola Inwutu, who specializes in colorful, large-scale artwork. The new colorful wall replaces a black-and-white mural dedicated to the Hampshire Chronicle. The mural blends elements of Italian and local history, from grapevines and wine bottles to depictions of Dionysus and Bacchus. It also pays tribute to William Walker, the diver who helped save Winchester Cathedral. The restaurant now seats up to 180 guests and features 2 life-sized yellow trees connecting its 2 main dining areas. Consegna, general manager of ZZ Winchester, said, "I can't wait to welcome guests into the restaurant to show off our new look. We hope locals and visitors to Winchester will love the brand new artwork and the cozy dining area as much as we do." With 1,000 free pizzas up for grabs, as well as the usual ZZ favourites on the menu, there's no excuse not to come in and visit. The free pizza is available from Monday to Friday until October the 3rd, and guests can claim the offer by completing a form and booking a table at the Winchester restaurant. Alongside the promotion, diners can enjoy Zizi's standout summer menu, which includes the Diavoletta Bombay, a spicy twist on the classic garlic Bombay, and King Prawn Vongole, a seafood pasta dish with king prawns and clams in a wild garlic, lemon and parsley butter sauce. Zizi Winchester is open from 11:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday to Thursday, and until 11 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. And to claim your free pizza, or to make a booking, visit https://www.zizi.co.uk/offers/2895. And that might be quite a lot to take in, I suspect. This is accompanied by a couple of photographs, one showing the outside of the restaurant, which doesn't look too changed. But on the second photograph, there's this magnificent yellow tree all lit with lights and the magnificent mural. It looks really quite splendid.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue to the death notices and Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So the death announcements this week. Bates, Dr. John Charles Bates, died on the 8th of September at Winchester Hospice, aged 87. Caldwell, Jennifer Caldwell, died peacefully on the 12th of September, aged 82. Hamilton, Maureen Louise Hamilton, died peacefully on the 11th of September, aged 90. Moldon, Julianne Dinah Moldon, died on the 13th of September, aged 80. And Street, Francis William Street, known as Frank or Squidge, who died peacefully at home in South Wanston, aged 78. Now we have a Christian comment, please, Andrew.
This week's Christian comment is written by Moira Redmond and is entitled Parable of the Dishonest Steward. Making sense of a difficult story. Last time I wrote the Christian comment column, I mentioned the parable of the workers in the vineyard. One of those stories that, I said, raises a slight sigh in church, because we are only human. Everyone will get paid the same, even though we may have done very different amounts of work. Is that fair? Last Sunday, the gospel in our church was another difficult one. The parable of the dishonest steward, Luke chapter 16. Here, the story is of a man who is about to be dismissed by his master. In order to protect his future, he makes friends with people who owe money to the master by letting off part of their debts. Then the master prays the dishonest steward for his astuteness. For the children of this world are more astute in dealing with their own kind than are the children of light. I have been listening to this story in church for more years than I admit to, and every time I have to puzzle to make sense of it. Is the man not dishonest? Flat out fraudulent. He gives away someone else's money. The story ends with a well-known quotation. No servant can be the slave of two masters. You cannot be the slave of both God and of money. The old school famous translation says God and Mammon. I have to try again each time this reading comes up, consulting the wise and the good, and not always knowing exactly what to think. There are various different takes on the story, sometimes bringing in the financial ways of the time. Some think that the master had been charging interest, which was forbidden, and that the steward was putting that right. Well, maybe. I learned in school that a parable was an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. A different way of looking at it is that it will make you think and upset your ideas, and that you should, at some point, be saying, that doesn't make sense, or that's not fair, and then you should make yourself think again. A priest I know said, the Father is not like the people of this world. He is infinitely kind and infinitely forgiving. In earthly terms, that is not sensible. Looking for the lost sheep, giving your worldly goods to a foolish son, and then welcoming back? But God doesn't operate like a human father. He is way beyond that. Nicholas King, a priest and theologian, says, this is a deeply subversive story, challenging us to look at the world with new eyes. The version that made most sense to me was this. Make friends with those who, when one day you find yourself in trouble, will welcome you These friends are the poor. And St. Augustine said that poor people are couriers and porters. They allow us to begin transferring our belongings now to the house that is being built for us in the hereafter. What a lovely thought, and what a great reason for trying to be generous.
Thank you. That concludes the question comment. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got the first, please.
This one is headed Charity Lunch for Stroke Day. It's slightly difficult to read because there's a couple of websites and email addresses, which I'll explain. Different Strokes Southampton will be holding a buffet lunch to celebrate World Stroke Day and our 15th year as a local stroke charity. It will take place on Wednesday, October the 29th, from 12:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Highfield Church Hall, Southampton. On World Stroke Day, we will be highlighting how important peer support for stroke is within the community, together with celebrating 15 years of running Different Strokes Southampton. Different Strokes Southampton is a local self-funded support group covering Southampton and the surrounding areas in Hampshire, designed specifically for stroke survivors of working age. And then we have, all one word, differentstrokessouthampton.co.uk. We are part of the National Different Strokes Charity, which is the only peer-to-peer stroke charity in the UK. Again, differentstrokes.co.uk. Our uniqueness is in the way we provide support, as the charity is run voluntarily by stroke survivors who have personal experience of the realities of life after a stroke. This gives us an immediate level of empathy with our members. Our website details the support and services we offer as a charity. The Southampton Group is run by Ranj Palmer, Andy Clay, Lindsay Fraser, and myself, Joe Elliott. Our buffet lunch to celebrate World Stroke Day and our 15th year will be attended by both stroke survivors and stroke coalitions. And that's from Joe Elliott, Group Coordinator, Different Strokes, Southampton.
Bus gripes. As a regular user of buses, I have been interested in the recent correspondence on the bus services. I've been a regular user of the 61 bus travelling between Eastleigh and Winchester, and on most occasions when I have travelled on it, there have been a reasonable number of passengers on board. I am perhaps fortunate that I want to travel from Eastleigh to Winchester, as I can do so by train or by being on the Chandler's Ford side of Eastleigh, can catch a bus. But for people living in other parts of the route or struggling with mobility, that is not an option. And for many hospital patients, the 61 bus is a very convenient means of transport. If finances are a factor in the decision, then I think it would be better for a lot of people if any cuts that were being deemed necessary resulted in a reduced service rather than no service at all. Recently, I attended a funeral in Stockbridge, for which the journey consisted of a 10-minute train journey and a 40-minute bus journey. But I discovered that to get there in time for the funeral, using this method, I needed to commence the train journey almost 3 hours before the funeral. Going back, there were no buses from Stockbridge to Winchester at the time that I needed to travel, and I ended up undertaking that part of the journey by taxi, which is not something I would like to do on a regular basis. And I expect that residents of Stockbridge do not find it easy to travel outside the town by bus. There is also a comment about the increased frequency of the bus 1 between Southampton and Winchester, but this is run by Blue Star, which is a different company to Stagecoach, and a lot of the Blue Star services, most of which either start or finish in Southampton, have a fairly frequent service. And that was from Malcolm Clark, Lee Road, Winchester.
Temporary traffic light praise, and this is from David Curling, Peninsula Square, Winchester. I used to fear the announcements of forthcoming road closures and temporary traffic lights. However, I have now come to realise that Winchester's traffic department handles these issues rather well. There must be someone in the council who really understands the technology of controlling traffic in a medieval environment. The traffic lights at Westgate might have been expected to cause major delays, but Imperial Traffic Management was contracted to manage the intersection. I use the Upper High Street daily, and I find myself full of praise for the minimal impact of the temporary traffic lights, which are operated by Phil.
This is headed, Where is Compton Lock? A paragraph in the community news pages of September the 4th mentioned that a narrowboat would be serving refreshments at Compton Lock over the weekend of September the 6th and 7th. As a narrowboater, this intrigued me, as the canal link between Basingstoke and the River Itchen at Winchester, suggested 200 years or so ago, never happened. A search of the internet revealed that on the above weekend, a narrowboat was dispensing refreshments at Compton Lock in Wolverhampton on the Staffs and Worcestershire Canal. I hope there were not too many disappointed people at Compton Lock on the River Itchen. And that's from Geraldine Buchanan, Belgarham Place, Winchester.
A reality check over housing. Plans for Fair Oaks 2,500 houses in addition to Eastleigh equates to 5,900 dwellings, excluding schools and doubtless a supermarket. This is a total lack of forward thinking, apart from destruction of a large area, chronicle September the 11th. A very modest number of inhabitants would be around 12,000, or based on two people per house, 24,000, and that is excluding children, and this is without vehicles. This is time, common sense and reality to be applied. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
The bus cut response is disingenuous. The response in the September 18th edition to the recent bus cuts by Nick Adams King, Hampshire County Council's leader, was somewhat disingenuous. He compared service X7R, part of the useful hourly service between Southampton and Salisbury, with service 46, the now withdrawn service from Winchester to North Baddersley. Originally, service 46 ran via the recent route to North Baddersley and on to Southampton General Hospital, SGH, and the city centre on an hourly basis, Monday to Saturday. But over the years, HCC reduced support and gaps appeared in the hourly timetable, and the route was truncated, firstly back to SGH and then to North Baddersley. Now, upon withdrawal in August 2025, there were two journeys in each direction, Monday to Friday. It's no surprise the passenger subsidy was significantly higher for the 46 than the X7R. The use of the 46 would have been restricted because of its infrequency. It's an unfortunate example of how the cuts, or the transport cuts, are self-perpetuating. And the more services are cut, the fewer people use them, and the further cuts are then justified. Pump money and marketing into a service like the Blue Star No. 1, which I think is extremely good, now running every 10 minutes, and more people use it. Cut it to two journeys a day, and far fewer people will use it. Surely there is no more intrinsic demand for links to Southampton and Winchester from Compton and Otterbourne than there is from the likes of Hiltonbury and Valley Park than were previously served by the 46. One area got used to having an improving service, and the others got used to a deteriorating one. Why not operate Blue Star, one every 12 minutes, and then run a sixth bus per hour along a different route to benefit more people, and surely make more money, as that is the apparent preoccupation of Nick Adams King and the operators. And that's from Peter Jacob, Compton Way, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and now we move on to editorial comment, please, Nikki.
which is headed Moving with the Times, with horses. In positive news for Winchester's High Street, another huge chain has renovated its premises. It's great when big chains invest. Who doesn't like to see the latest spruce up? A fresh lick of paint, a new colour scheme, perhaps even a reshuffle of tables. Several of these big chains have recently spent some cash and tarted their places up. Pizza Express being one, moving from its historic building next to the City Mill to a new premises further into the High Street. Rick Stein also closed for a refit this year. Chococo also recently unveiled a new look, as did Costa. We love to celebrate when money gets spent in our city. However, we have to confess to being a little sad to see Zizi's new look. Despite it trying to offset our gloom by dishing out 1,000 free pizzas, it's sad to see it move away from any connection to its heritage and merge into the chain's company-branded snazzy design. Yes, it's bright, and we admit to liking the neon washing line, but the building has such a rich heritage as the Chronicle's office, it seems a shame that whoever was in charge of the new design decided not to give even a nod to the past. The Chronicle opened there in 1807, and until 2004, it was the home of its editorial offices and the printing press. For nearly two centuries, the printing presses rolled there, before moving to Southampton and then to its current home in Weymouth. The editorial offices moved to Upper Brook Street, moving in with sister title The Daily Echo, where we remain today. When Zizi's opened, it kept remnants of its history, even displaying a printing press, until a refit during COVID saw it hoisted out and it displayed pictures from past times on its wall, including a great mural at the back. This latest refurb has seen that mural painted over and almost every bit of its Winchester history erased. The only reminder are the words Jacob and Johnson, which are moulded into the preserved historic frontage. Still, at least the restaurant now has two life-sized, colourful horses to look at while eating their pizzas.
Thank you. Now we have First Person by Kimberly Barbara, I believe.
And this is entitled, AI Could Be the Journalist's Best Friend. AI and the rise of robotic assistant is the main subject of any discussion at any conference lately. Every interview that I'm part of seems to include at least one question about AI for whatever industry. A chat with a lawyer the other day saw AI brought up, and a recent press conference with Wiltshire Police saw a question about the force's use of raised. Council meetings, small businesses, it all seems to have seeped into almost everything we do. Initial fears were that the AI would be put us all out of jobs and create digital revolution akin to the Industrial Revolution, where machines could replace workers. Recently, I attended a future media technology conference in London, organised by the Press Gazette. It's a great event and I have attended for the best part of 3 years. Most of the agenda seems this year to be centred on AI and its impact in processed at publishers worldwide. I was in awe listening to some of the speakers, particularly Johanna Sudahonen from Alma Media, Finland, in 2012. Alma Media became the first publisher in Finland to launch digital subscriptions. They have been in the digital subscription business longer than any UK publisher, so we all listened intently to what they have learned over the years, in particularly their use of AI when it comes to personalisation and when a paywall is presented to a reader. This dynamic paywall may seem an alien concept to many British sites and one that some readers may struggle to understand. Some readers still struggle to understand why they should be paying to read any local news online whatsoever. I really thought it brought into it the possibility of using AI to analyse vast data such as the individual user's browsing history to identify when a person is likely to transition from casual reader to loyal reader, with paid subscription and bring identifying efficiencies to newsrooms across the country. Many of the complaints about our paywall, which generally kicks in when someone reads 20 stories in 30 days, though it allows users to access additional for free before requiring payment, and that it prevents people from reading articles that have an overriding public interest. For instance, if we publish a police press appeal, we have a duty to our community to share that news. We can select or for this article to be published online without paywall. However, this relies on human intervention in the newsrooms. Human intervention is primarily a network of handful of reporters who would all much rather be out in the community finding stories, meeting people and doing the actual journalism rather than mundane back office admin work such as coding articles so it appears correctly on our website. This also relies on reporters knowing the value of their story and being able to assess whether this should fall in the small percentage of stories that go up completely free or whether they should be asking for something in exchange for their work. Heaven forbid that most actually want to earn a living from their full-time jobs. If AI can relieve our hardest working staff of guesswork and admin, plus serve up benefits for our readers at the same time as convincing more people to sign up and fund our journalism with digital subscriptions, then that, what's not to like? This is just one area where our company could benefit from using AI and may seem minor. However, this is reflected in the thousands of other administrative tasks that our staff perform every day. If one by one, slowly but surely, AI can step in to alleviate some of this increasing burden of administration, then it frees up more time for most of us to do our work on local news, want to be actually in person in our communities, not hiding behind a laptop or glued to a desk.
Thank you, Andrew. Now you have a couple of items from Belgaren, please.
Yes, Belgaren, an alternative look at the news. And the first one is entitled Near-Death VR Experience. A near-death experience is being simulated through virtual reality by students at Winchester School of Art. The project is one of 16 created by students at the university that was showcased at the London Design Festival. Players lie on a couch and wear a VR headset that simulates a near-death journey, taking them through snippets of life moments in locations including a classroom, a city, the countryside, a wedding, a hospital, and a funeral. The memories appear as floating bubbles with the life journey determined by how long players gaze at the different bubbles. The experience culminates in a fleeting journey through the memories the player has engaged with. The experience called Echoes of the Last Breath has been created by arts and media technology students and Veronica Yang, Yiming Li, and Xinyu Yang. Veronica, 26, who is studying a PhD in art, said, "The concept was inspired by research on near-death experiences, showing that they can reduce death anxiety and foster empathy. We want to design a short VR encounter that helps young audiences reflect on life's meaning beyond extra lives or respawns in games. We hope it resonates with a wider audience." And that is accompanied by, I was going to say a photograph, but it's probably a simulated digital image. And it's a scene from the virtual reality immersive garden. And that's courtesy of the University of Southampton. Right. Moving on, the second article is Two Rare Panda Cubs Born. Two rare red panda cubs have been born at an animal health and welfare centre. The pair were born in late June at Sparshawe College's Group Annual Health and Welfare Research Centre, AHWRC, to parents Miko and Thimpi. The centre describes the birth as a victory for the endangered species. Shana Ratnyaka, an AHWRC manager, said, "We are extremely proud of Miko and Thimbi, who were only together for a short time before breeding. The animal keeping team have been instrumental in caring for the cubs and ensuring they get everything they need." And that's accompanied by a rather sweet photograph of the two red panda cubs at Sparshawe College.
Thank you. Now we move on to the What's On this week. And we've got the Chesil Theatre is running until the 4th of October, performing Laura Wade's Olivier Award-winning play, Home I'm Darling, a satirical comedy about nostalgia, gender roles and the illusion of a perfect 1950s existence. Tickets can be obtained from the Chesil Theatre website. I've just been told that's sold out, so... Obviously, too many people in this room involved with the Chesil selling tickets. On Sunday, October the 12th, at St. Cross Church, there is a choir concert at 7 p.m. The Thomas Wilkes Singers will feature Renaissance works followed by music from Winchester composers. It's a free concert, but there is a retiring collection in aid of the Winchester Beacon, which supports homeless people in the city. And there's two items for note at the Theatre Royal. On Tuesday the 7th of October at 7:30 p.m. there's a musical celebration honouring the comic author P.G. Wodehouse, an evening of stories and songs. And tickets for that, 01962 840440. And the following evening, on the October the 8th, Wednesday, at 7:30 p.m., there's an adaptation of George Orwell's Animal Farm. It's a one-man performance with lots of props, I think, to create all the necessary additional actors. It's a performance by Guy Masterton. And again, tickets 01962 840 440. Lighting Up Time ends Friday the 26th of September at 6:57 a.m. and begins at 6:55 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 1st of October, it ends at 7:05 a.m. and begins at 6:44 p.m. And if you knew someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news.
Crowds enjoy a fantastic day out with hounds and horses. The rain held off until the end of the afternoon at the Hampshire Countryside Day, allowing crowds to enjoy an action-packed, family-friendly day out. The event, held at the Berrylee Estate on Sunday, September the 14th, saw visitors enjoying activities such as inter-hunt scurry, gun dog displays, hound parades, terrier racing, and the nail-biting Chase Me Charlie Gate horse jumping challenge in the main arena. There were hands-on experiences for visitors too. They had the chance to try clay pigeon sessions led by Duncan Jeans of Chalk Hill Shooting Ground, archery with Ravenfield archers, Meon Valley air guns, taster ranges, and fishing tips and casting demos. Many canine companions took part in the fun competitions. Visitors could also explore countryside shopping and sample local food and drink. The event was sponsored by Shorts Waste Management, Demolition and Plant Hire, and the proceeds will go to the Countryside Alliance campaign efforts and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. And there are several photographs, one of the main day with obviously lots of laughter. And I think it's a papillon. It's a very hairy small dog with sticky out ears. And the owner has a large rosette, so it's obviously won a prize for something. and someone having a go at the clay pigeon shooting. But the one that gets me, it's headed terrier racing. Now, there are three terriers, very furry and not doing terribly well. Definitely a Labrador, a black one, a spaniel with its ears flying through the air and winning, and a lurcher. So why it's called terrier racing, I think something went wrong there.
People miss vital support. Older people could be missing out on vital financial support due to confusing application processes. Age Concern Hampshire is tackling the issue through its information service, which offers older people across Hampshire personalised assistance with form filling, financial entitlement checks, and help applying for schemes such as Blue Badges. The charity team of trained volunteers supports applications for attendance allowance, personal independent payment, PIP, pension credit and Blue Badges, either by phone or during home visits. Age Concern Hampshire is helping older people through this information service. Yvonne Hiscock, Information Service Senior Coordinator at Age Concern Hampshire, said, "Filling in forms can be overwhelming and many older people do not claim what they are entitled to. Our volunteers provide tailored assistance ensuring individuals receive the guidance most relevant to their needs. In 2023, around 1.8 million people in Great Britain received attendance allowance, but an estimated 140,000 eligible individuals did not claim it. As of March 2024, 2.93 million people in England were entitled to a blue badge without further assessment, yet only 2.84 million valid badges were held. In addition to the benefit support, Age Concern Hampshire Information Service also signposts individuals to other services, including home services, digital inclusion, foot care, and specialist support. The charity can be contacted on 01962 868545 or by email at So the phone number, I'll repeat again, is 01962 868545.
And this article is about the recent state visit by President Trump to the UK, and it's entitled "Trump and King Took Into Local Produce." Produce from Hampshire was showcased on the world stage as President Donald Trump tucked into a local delicacy at the state banquet. The 160 guests dined with King Charles III at Windsor Castle, using 1,452 pieces of cutlery to feast on a menu written in French. As a starter, President Trump and the rest of the guests enjoyed panna cotta de cresson et œuf sucré sur sable de parmesan, which featured watercress sourced locally in Hampshire. The dish, which in English translates to Hampshire watercress, panna cotta with parmesan shortbread and quail egg salad, had local produce front and centre. Natasha Dunochki, commercial director of Hampshire Fair, said that the watercress being served really underlines the quality and heritage of our county's food and drink. Natasha said, "Hampshire is renowned for its outstanding produce, from our famous chalk stream trout to watercress, celebrated each year at the Alsford Watercress Festival. It's fantastic to see Hampshire watercress showcased on such a prestigious occasion, with the royal household choosing to feature a local ingredient on the world stage." The guests at the banquet dined on a Norfolk chicken ballotine wrapped in courgette with a thyme and savoury-infused jus as a main course. The dessert was a vanilla ice cream bomb with Kentish raspberry sorbet interior with lightly poached Victoria plums. And jolly fine it all sounds. And that is accompanied by a photograph of the Princess of Wales with the U.S. President Donald Trump, King Charles III, and the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
Woman's retirement book launched success. More than 70 people attended the launch of a new book at the Pump House in Winchester. The event was held on Thursday, September the 11th, to celebrate the release of What Next? The Savvy Women's Guide to Redefining Retirement. The book is written by local author Jane Moffat and examines the life stages of stopping work from the perspective of women at this moment in time. The book offers thoughtful insight, practical advice, and inspiration for women who are not already to fade into the background after leaving their careers. It is aimed at women who have reached the top of their professions but have chosen to step away from the demands of corporate or entrepreneurial life. Jane said, "I wrote this book because I am part of this cohort of women. We've spent decades building careers, breaking barriers, and leading organizations, but no one tells us what comes next. I couldn't find a book that spoke to this transition from full-on career to meaningful post-career life, so I wrote it. It's an Amazon number 2 bestseller and was featured in 3 different categories for hot new releases. As an executive coach, trainer and facilitator, Jane Moffat has 30 years of experience working with women at key points of change in their lives, where the professional and the personal intersect. She writes and publishes regularly in this area and is a member of staff at the Henley Business School's Coaching Centre and regularly attends meetings of the Women and Work All-Party Parliamentary Group. Ms. Moffat is a writer and business owner and has supported women in Winchester and the surrounding area for nearly 30 years. She is a member of the first generation of women to climb the professional ladder and uses her own experience to help others. The book, which costs £14.99, is available in all good bookstores.
Cottage among best Jane Austen stays. An elegant cottage in Winchester has been named as one of the UK's best Jane Austen-inspired stays, according to Airbnb. This holiday rental site curates a list of properties as a way to mark the 250th anniversary of the author's birth. She is well known for her literary work, which includes Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, Emma, and Mansfield Park. Austen was born in Steventon in Hampshire, and Winchester was her final resting place when she died at the age of 41 in 1817. Perhaps it's not a surprise, then, that a Winchester home has been included on the list. A full list of the best Jane Austen-esque stays in the UK can be found on Airbnb website here. Why is Winchester home among the UK's best Jane Austen-inspired stays? Wickham College on Simmons Street was highlighted by Airbnb due to its comfort and proximity to Jane Austen's history. They wrote, "Situated in the heart of Winchester, Jane Austen's final resting place, this elegant townhouse combines period delights with a modern comfort. A short walk from Winchester Cathedral, where Austen is buried, it provides a peaceful base to explore the city's rich literary heritage. Features also include wood-burning fire, while it's thoughtfully decorated with various antiques placed around the home. It adds, the wisteria provides a dappled shade in the patio, making a lovely place to sit on a sunny day. The house is ideal for a couple, but can sleep 4. The second bedroom is small with limited storage space. It has a double bed and it also has a small desk. Wickham College Cottage has been well received by guests, earning a 4.99/5 rating from 198 reviews. One visitor wrote, super little house right in the heart of Winchester. comfortable and cosy too, making you feel right at home. We were also able to park right outside for the duration of our stay. Couldn't be positioned better for all the major attractions, shopping and restaurants. Another posted, this home in the idyllic part of Winchester and walkable to everything. It is a charming courtyard which we use daily, and a super clean, lovely little touches throughout the home. We would definitely return again. A third shared, we didn't want to leave. It's such a beautiful home in a fantastic location with thoughtful touches, including a bottle of wine. We felt right at home. The linen and towels were excellent quality and so quiet, and right next to the magnificent Winchester Cathedral. And there's a picture of the front door and the front, obviously the front house of Wickham Cottage. But intriguingly, and of course which you don't see unless you go in, is the courtyard area. And it looks absolutely enchanting. It's got the wisteria hanging down, and there's a two-seater garden seat and a little table and two other chairs as well. And it looks absolutely delightful.
100 new nurses and nursing associates receive their badges. More than 100 new nurses and new nursing associates have received their training badges. The new nurses and nursing associates from the University of Winchester were honoured, and the ceremony took place at the West Downs Auditorium and marks the completion of their training. The tradition of nursing badges began in 1860 at St Thomas's Hospital, the first formal nursing school in England, founded by Florence Nightingale. Elizabeth Davies Ward, the Dean of the Faculty of Health and Wellbeing at the University of Winchester, said, "You are now at the beginning of a journey into one of the most noble and impactful professions in society." The badge is more than a symbol of that commitment. It is a reminder of the trust people place in you as nurses. It's a promise to continue to care for people with heart, compassion, and unwavering dedication. And the badges were presented by Sue Hill from the Foundation of Nursing Studies. Ms. Hill, who holds an honorary doctorate at the University of Winchester, encouraged graduates to embrace the breadth of opportunities in nursing. And she said, "Don't limit yourself to one thing. Find the job and the people that suit you." And this is accompanied by a number of photographs of all of these, the graduates receiving their badges and at the end of whatever the training was. And they're all looking extremely excited and obviously looking forward to the challenge of their new profession.
Chef reveals his culinary journey. A top chef shared what inspired him to start his culinary journey. Damien Brown, chef and co-owner of the Chessel Rectory in Winchester, said he was inspired to become a chef after watching TV shows featuring Gary Rhodes, Delia Smith and Rick Stein. He said, "As a kid, I was addicted to old school TV programs with chefs such as Gary Rhodes, Delia Smith and Rick Stein, and I decided that it looked fun. So I left school and enrolled on a catering course at my local college." His career journey began with a placement at Northcote Manor during catering college, where he honed his skills under Michelin-starred chefs such as Billy Reid and Marco Pierre White. He has since worked in iconic restaurants such as L'Escargot, Mirabel, The Vineyard at Stockcross, and Richard Corrigan. After working in California and Sydney, he settled in Hampshire and opened the Chessel Rectory with his friend Mark Dodd back in 2008. Mr. Brown said, "Heading up the kitchen brigade and being an integral part of the Chessel. We're still here after 18 years, having survived the credit crunch recession, COVID, all the lockdowns, not to mention power cuts on Christmas Eve, and even a chimney fire. So being here for nearly 20 years feels pretty good." His signature dish is an indulgent starter of crispy chicken wings and pan-fried scallops with cauliflower puree and rich indulgent chicken cream. He also loves his whole roast Hampshire partridge with a honey and black pepper glaze served with cabbage and fondant potatoes with his autumn tasting menu. His favourite place to eat in Hampshire includes Pulpo Negro in Alresford and the Asian Food Hall and Grocery Store in Upper Brook Street, Winchester. At home, he enjoys cooking roast dinners and Lancashire hot pot with his daughters Molly and Lily. His favourite wine is Greek Assyrtiko, but as autumn approaches, he prefers a full-bodied Appassimento. He always has homemade spiced onion jam in his fridge and is a big fan of Lyburn cheese, chalk steamed trout and local game from Medstead. For him, the next big restaurant trend is seasonality rather than following fads. He said, "We value beautiful ingredients, consistency and attention to detail." And we're all dribbling.
Supermarket commits 26 million to region. Aldi is planning to invest an estimated 26 million in Hampshire as part of its 1.6 billion expansion plan. The UK's fourth largest supermarket announced this week that it will open 80 new stores in 2026 and 2027 to meet the rising demands for affordable groceries. The investment will also cover upgrades to new stores and the development of distribution centres. The retailer is scouting for sites in Winchester and Portsmouth to establish new stores in the coming years. Currently operating at 1,060 outlets, Aldi aims to expand to 1,500 stores across the UK. This growth is expected to create thousands of job opportunities and benefit British suppliers. Giles Hurley, Chief Executive Officer for Aldi UK and Ireland, said, "Shoppers are still finding things difficult, and that's why we're staying laser-focused on doing what Aldi does best, offering customers great quality products at unbeatable prices. Nobody else is making the same commitment to everyday low prices. No clubs, no gimmicks, no tricks, just prices our customers can trust and quality they can depend on. Since we opened our first UK store more than 35 years ago, we've brought high-quality, affordable groceries to almost 800 towns and cities. But there are hundreds more communities that don't have an Aldi nearby."
Bobby's on the beat is the aim of the new deputy. Putting more Bobbies on the beat in Hampshire and boosting visible policing are priorities for the county's new Deputy Police and Crime Commissioner. Former Conservative Havant Borough Council leader, Alex Rennie, 34, was appointed to the role following approval by a police and crime panel earlier this month. He will support Tory Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones in delivering her vision for safer communities in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Mr. Rennie will officially start his role on Monday, September the 22nd. He will speak to communities about the impact of crime, help manage the force's budget, and hold Chief Constable Alexis Boone to account. Donna is reopening police stations. She's getting more local bobbies on the beat and an uplift in police officers, Mr. Rennie said. "The number one message we had is that people want to see visible policing. They want to see police on the street, and they want to feel like if they talk to police and report crimes, they're getting action. Clearly, one of the challenges that has happened in policing in the last 15 years, or certainly after 2010, was a shrinking of police numbers. Police numbers fell by around 20,000 in the previous decade after the coalition government cut funding under its austerity programme. That number had recovered across England and Wales by 2023, although the population had grown by around 7% since 2010. In January, Ms. Jones announced plans to recruit 90 more officers, funded by an increase in council tax and an extra £2.6 million a year from the government. "One of the challenges we've got now is trying to get police numbers back up to where they were," Mr. Rennie said. We've got to find the right officers, train them up, and get them into forward-facing roles. One of our bigger challenges will be that. Not just managing budgets, but money is always tight due to inflation and the current state of the economy. There's no point hiding away from the mess Labour's getting us into with the economy. We have to make the budget go further, and that's a challenge for us as well. Mr. Rennie started his career in 2014 as a reporter at the Salisbury Journal, where he reported on allegations of sexual misconduct against former Prime Minister Ted Heath. He later worked as Chief of Staff for an MP and served as a senior advisor to the Shadow Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury. And this is accompanied by a picture of Mr. Alex Rennie. And he says he's already started his role on September the 22nd.
Zoo launches discounted ticket scheme. More families will be able to enjoy a day out at the zoo thanks to a new discounted ticket scheme. Marwell Zoo has launched a community access scheme offering reduced entry prices for visitors receiving universal credit and other qualifying benefits. The scheme is designed to make the zoo more accessible to families who may have previously found the cost of admission a barrier. We want to help with that and hope this offer allows a wider range of family budgets to visit Marwell who might not previously have been able to. Eligible visitors will be able to book tickets for £5 per child and £10 per adult. Children under three and carers can enter free of charge. Proof of benefits and photo ID are required on arrival, and all tickets must be booked online in advance. The scheme is open to households receiving universal credit, working tax credit, child tax credit, employment and support allowance, income support, or job seekers allowance. A maximum of 6 tickets can be booked per household. The scheme was announced at the 11 million postcards event in London, which brought together more than 100 charities to discuss accessibility and inclusion. Marwell Zoo said the scheme is part of its wider commitment to making nature and conservation experiences accessible to everyone.
Documentary finds new audience after its re-release. A documentary first produced in the 1980s is finding new audiences more than 30 years after its original release. Channel Islands Occupied, a living history created by Twyford-based TV producer Brian Matthews, tells the story of the German occupation of the Channel Islands during the Second World War. Despite initial rejections from ITV companies, Mr. Matthews secured a bank loan to fund the project through his Hampshire-based company Tomahawk Films. The documentary was shot on location in Guernsey and Alderney and features interviews with survivors of the 1940-45 occupation. Major Evan Ozan, then Deputy Director of Guernsey Tourism, allowed the film to be subtitled The Official Guernsey Liberation Video. The documentary has since sold 35,000 copies on video and DVD. Filmed in and around Guernsey's German Occupation Museum, it includes rare US and UK archive footage. Launched in St. Petersport on the 45th anniversary of the liberation in 1990, the film is now reaching new audiences. Mr. Matthews, cameraman Ian Fraser, and Hollywood audio producer Dirk Maggs have brought the documentary back to the screen to mark the 80th anniversary of the island's liberation. The newly updated version is available to watch for free on YouTube, and there's a picture of Brian Matthews, and it's also our chairman of Winchester Talking Newspapers was one of the people evacuated from the Channel Islands during the war, and he gives talks about it as well, which are very good.
The EA chair joins water testing event on the river. The chair of the Environment Agency joined a citizen science water testing event on the River Itchen. Alan Lovell attended the event on Saturday, September the 20th, in Hampshire to highlight the importance of community involvement in the monitoring and protection of UK waterways. The event was a joint effort by Earthwatch Europe and the Rivers Trust. Mr. Lovell was joined by Dr. Sasha Woods, Earthwatch Europe's Director of Science and Policy, and Alison Matthews, the Chalk Streams Restoration Strategy Manager at the Rivers Trust. They all tested the river quality of the River Itchen, which is one of the UK's globally rare chalk streams. The event was meant to emphasise the growing recognition by official bodies of the invaluable data collected by volunteers. The Rivers Trust Big River Watch Initiative also encourages public participation in monitoring river health through the Big River Watch Survey app. Data collected by citizen scientists has consistently shown a concerning picture of the nation's freshwaters health, with the UK, or the Great UK, Water Blitz findings from April showing that 66% of data points analysed across the UK had unacceptable levels of nutrient pollution. The Environment Agency acknowledged the role of citizen data, with some of its own staff participating in the Water Blitz to compare findings with official data. Our volunteers have shown time and again that they can collect extensive, accurate, and timely information on water conditions. This event was a testament to the value of open, transparent data and the need for authorities to integrate citizen science into their monitoring frameworks. We believe this is a crucial step towards ensuring our future rivers are healthy from source to sea. Alan Lovell, chair of the Environment Agency, added, "Citizen scientists carry out invaluable work that helps us better understand our environment. It's great to see volunteers coming together across the country through initiatives like the Great River Blitz and the Big River Watch, which show just how powerful community scientists can be in helping protect our rivers." And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs of a group of them actually on the River Itchen, or on a bridge over the River Itchen. And they've been doing some testing. So there's Kerry Sims, Alan Lovell, who's the chair of the EA, Matt Owen Farmer, Alison Matthews, and Dr. Sasha Woods. And they're doing excellent work.
And this is a little letter that got left out, which actually I think is rather interesting, so I'm going to read it to you. Headed, "My Dad Saved the Westgate Cobbles. Thank you for publishing the photograph of my father, Geoffrey Smith, on page 44 of your 11th September edition. The item prompted a memory which may not have been publicised in the past and may be of interest. My sister, Sarah Eatwell, shared this picture on a family WhatsApp group in November 2023, which prompted my brother, Andrew Smith, to tell me something which I'm now proud to know. When the Guildhall was being developed about 40 years ago, they filled in the old coaching arch. Dad, Geoffrey Smith, Mayor of Winchester, 67 to 68, found the builders about to dump the old granite sets that the coach used to drive over. He arranged for them to be saved and persuaded the council to relay them within the Westgate Arch to replace the plain concrete paving stones. Dad's daily walk to and from work took him through the Westgate, and now whenever I walk on those cobbles, I think of him." And that from Judy Smith, The Soak, Alsford. And there's a really beautiful photograph through the arch, looking right down the high street, upper high street down. You can see the horse statue and the beautiful tree. It's a very special photograph.
Climate action after rooftop protest. Winchester Cathedral is taking action to address climate change following a recent protest on its rooftop. The cathedral outlined its environmental efforts after four activists from Christian Climate Action, CCA, spent 5 hours demonstrating on the roof on Saturday, September 13th, to highlight the urgency of the climate emergency. Canon Dr. Roland Ream, interim dean of Winchester Cathedral, said, "We had a heartfelt word from the retired Baptist minister, James Grote, in notices on Sunday, plus an unfurling of the CCA's banner. Then we had conversations over coffee. Let us be very mindful that in the Christian tradition there is an uncomfortable prophetic element, and we must take heed of that. The cathedral is in the advanced stages of installing solar panels on its works roof, yard roof, with plans to extend the scheme to four additional roofs in the cathedral estate. Other sustainability measures include measures to conserve energy, water uses, and all waste to be recycled, and many sustainable traders. Reverend James Grote said, "The Church of England is a powerful institution. We're urging it to speak out, challenge government, and stand up to big businesses and fossil fuel companies which are driving the climate and nature emergency. We are grateful for the chance to speak in the cathedral and talk to the congregation afterwards."
Classic cars rolled into the playground for a history lesson. Classic cars rolled into the playground for a hands-on history lesson. Pupils at Weston Primary School in Winchester were treated to a special visit from the All Sorts Motor Club of Alsford on Thursday, September the 18th. The club brought a selection of vintage vehicles to their playground to support their learning topic, which was, how have cars changed since our grandparents were children? Year one pupils had the chance to explore cars from different eras, compare classic features with modern designs, and ask questions directly to the owners. And Mrs. Bentley, and I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt at that point, what a superb name for the teacher in this subject. Mrs. Bentley, a year one teacher at the school, said, "This was a wonderful opportunity for the children to experience history in a way that feels real and memorable. Seeing the cars in person really brought our topic to life, and the visitors has built up even more exciting for our upcoming trip to Bewley." Pupils were intrigued by details such as chrome bumpers, large steering wheels, and the absence of modern technology like touch screens and seat sensors. The visit served as a practical introduction to their forthcoming trip to Bewley National Motor Museum, which is scheduled for October the 1st. Laurie Clark from the All Sorts Motor Club of Alsford said, "We were delighted to share our passion for classic cars with the children. It's important to keep motoring heritage alive, and inspiring the next generation is a big part of that." And this is accompanied by a photograph of four lovely old classic cars lined up in the playground. It's a wonderful sight to see these old cars. A group of year one children looking at them, wondering probably what on earth those old pieces of car or pieces of metal were doing, but never mind. Brilliant cars.
Yeah. Cameras aim to cut abuse. South Western Railway is stepping up efforts to protect staff by expanding the use of body-worn cameras amid a surge of assaults. The train operator has recorded more than two assaults per day against staff members across its network this year, including violent attacks and verbal threats. According to British Transport Police, the number of violent and public order offences reported has doubled between 2021 and 2024-25. The worrying increase is consistent with similar rises in public services and industries such as the National Health Service and retail. Assaults can significantly affect the physical and mental well-being of staff, as well as disrupt railway operations when they need time off to recover. Perpetrators of such behaviour could face serious consequences, as SWR supports BTP with investigations and criminal prosecutions. Following a trial in 2021, South Western Railway has introduced body-worn video cameras for staff in customer-facing roles, such as train guards and gate assistants. These cameras are activated by the wearer and capture 30 seconds of footage prior to activation. The rail firm has also launched a new poster campaign to warn potential perpetrators of the consequences of abusing staff. The posters depict intimidating incidents of abuse from the perspective of a staff member captured on body-worn video camera and show the perpetrators facing police custody, trial and prison.
School to build community garden thanks to a 5K grant. Excuse me. A Winchester primary school has said it is thrilled to have been chosen to be the recipient of Tesco Golden Grant. On Saturday, September the 6th, the Tesco Express store in High Street held the Golden Grant event for the first time. As customers entered the store, they were encouraged to pick a token from a bag, with the winning golden token securing a £5,000 grant for the customer's chosen school. Three schools were in the mix to win the big prize: Kingsworthy Primary School, PTFA, Sunhill Infant School, and Winnell Primary School. The golden token was pulled out by Gina Muller, who decided to award the grant to Winnell Primary School. A spokesperson from the school said, "With this funding, we'll be starting a community garden and equipping our outdoor space with simple tools like gloves, buckets and fire strikes. These resources will give our children the chance to enjoy gardening, outdoor crafts and nature exploration, fun and hands-on experiences that spark curiosity and build a love for the environment. Looking ahead, we hope to add shelters so that the outdoor learning can continue whatever the weather, creating a space that encourages creativity, teamwork and care for the world around us. From all of us at Winnell, a huge thank you to everyone who voted." And there's a picture of the children in the playground, I presume. There's a big tree there and there's quite a few of them, and one of them is holding up a picture. It just says thank you on it, which is lovely.
Family fly in to celebrate Joanna's 100th birthday. A Winchester woman recently celebrated her 100th birthday with more than 70 visitors coming to celebrate. Joanna, or Jo Perrott, celebrated her birthday on September the 10th at the United Church, Jury Street, surrounded by family and friends, and loved ones travelled from as far as the Netherlands, Switzerland and Norway. Mrs. Perrott also had a separate gathering at her house where she welcomed some of her closest friends and members from the church to celebrate the occasion. Mrs. Perrott's daughter, Sue Howard, 66, of North Yorkshire, said, "My mother has always been very caring and fair to everyone, which is something I love about her. And even with five siblings, she always treated us equally. Mine and my brother's favourite memory was when we used to go to Holland in the summer for 2 weeks to see our mother's family. They were very memorable times as a family, as we didn't do much travelling, so we always looked forward to that. I always remember how long the journey was, but it was nice to see her with her family, as she was one of eight, and usually they would come and meet us at the beach. Born in Terneuzen, the Netherlands, in 1925, Mrs. Perrott grew up as one of eight siblings, and her father ran a grocer's shop and grew vegetables in nearby schools. As a keen linguist at school, she then worked at Terneuzen Town Hall as a shorthand typist. Jo first met Lloyd Perrott at the end of the Second World War, when he was stationed on a Royal Navy ship in Terneuzen. Shortly after, Lloyd returned to Winchester. The two kept in contact through letters until Jo moved to Winchester in 1953. The couple married 2 years later and began married life in a flat above a shop in the High Street opposite the Guildhall, and then later moved to Winnall. Jo and Lloyd raised six children, five boys and a girl, and their family later grew to 11 grandchildren and eight great-grandchildren. Their firstborn child, George, sadly died in 1997, aged 41, to motor neuron disease. Lloyd is fondly remembered at the Hampshire Chronicle, where he worked as a machine minder until after his retirement. And his work in tending the flower boxes above the Hampshire Chronicle offices in the High Street is another fond memory for many people. And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs, one of Joanna as a schoolgirl, and I know she must have been early teens, perhaps, maybe. And then a picture of her taken at her recent 100th birthday party.
Vineyard's earliest harvest on record. A vineyard is on track for one of its earliest harvests on record. Hattingley Valley Wines, based near Alsford, began picking grapes this week in a season that could break records. The early start follows a warm summer, with many vineyards across the county harvesting up to 2 weeks ahead of schedule. Simon Robinson, owner and chair of Hattingley Valley, said, "We're preparing for a truly historic season." The 25-acre vineyard is currently harvesting Pinot Meunier grapes with the aim of producing 500 tonnes of juice for around 420,000 bottles. Rob McCulloch, MW, head winemaker, said, "Pinot Meunier is bouncing back strongly, and along with Pinot Noir, we expect deeper colours and riper flavours. 2025 could be a standout year for rosé." Traditionally, the Hampshire grape harvest starts in the final week of September, but this year's early picking highlights the impact of changing climate conditions. And there are a lot of photographs, all taken on the most beautiful sunny day with blue skies. The workers, all dressed in blue, clipping the grapes off the vines, putting them into large containers, which are then put into a larger one and tipped into the press, ready for the presses. But there's one aerial photograph of the lines and lines of vineyards and the tractor with the truck behind with all the grapes going in. It is so beautiful, but it's not what you expect in England. You expect the vendange in France, and this is happening in England. There are beautiful photographs.
Doctor Who star to play Sherlock Holmes. The Doctor himself, Colin Baker, is swapping his TARDIS for 221B Baker Street as he heads to Winchester to play the cunning detective Sherlock Holmes. Colin Baker, 82, who famously played the sixth Doctor in the BBC sci-fi television series Doctor Who, is materialising in Winchester for two nights. The former Time Lord is reprising his role as Sherlock Holmes in a radio play of the classic story The Sign of Four on September the 30th and October the 1st. Book tickets here at www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. Colin will be starring alongside Terry Molloy, best known for playing the villainous creator of the Daleks, Davros in Doctor Who, and Mike Tucker in The Archers, who will be reprising his role as Dr. John Watson. "I'm not obvious casting," Colin said, "and I wouldn't get cast to do it on stage, probably because I don't look like most people idea of Sherlock Holmes, an 82-year-old bearded man." Colin explained that what to expect from his radio play. "It's a very good story. It's about death in closed rooms. How did the person get in to kill him? It's about missing treasure. It's about death in India 50 years earlier. It's about a pearl that gets sent every year to the daughter of the dead man, and she doesn't know where it has come from. Sherlock is tasked with finding out, and quite a thrilling story." Colin is no stranger to radio acting, having regularly starred in Doctor Who audio dramas for decades, and explained that the production that goes into performing a radio play is rather different from stage or screen. He said, "In the traditional story, there are things like going down the river on boats, looking for a missing treasure. On television and films, you can have a go at doing that, but on radio, unless you've got a huge bath in the studio, I'm not quite sure how are they going to do that. I suspect it will be done by sound effects. There will be some splishing and splashing of water. We have a studio manager doing all the sound effects, which includes coconut shells for horses, which I have to say, you couldn't come up with anything better for the sound effect because it worked brilliantly. We've got a wind machine and a gravel tray where people with boots on the gravel tray are going up and down motions to sounds of like people walking, and we've got all the tricks of the trade." Colin spoke highly of some of his favourite actors to take on the role of Sherlock Holmes. Basil Rathbone was one I remember who did the films in the 30s and 40s. who was brilliant and perfect, and Douglas Wilmer, who did it on television. They all tend to have the same rather aquiline, tall, slim, brainy-looking faces. Anyone who's ever seen me knows that I might be tall, but I'm not slim, and I don't have a brainy-looking face. But hopefully my voice sounds like Sherlock Holmes when I'm talking. Hopefully they can believe that the voice is Sherlock, and that's what matters. And there's a picture of the young Colin Baker outside the blue TARDIS, and there's a picture of a much more mature Colin Baker, and also a sign for the sign of fall.
Project Secret Santa is back for a second year. A project aiming to ensure that every vulnerable child and young adult in Hampshire receives something for Christmas is returning at the weekend. Project Secret Santa 2025 will be kicking off its second initiative on Saturday, September 27th at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. with a big community sew at Week Community Centre, urging sewing enthusiasts and creative minds to come together. Last year, the event distributed more than 600 Christmas stockings to vulnerable children across Hampshire, and this year the group hopes to make an even bigger impact by reaching even more children. Project Secret Santa founder Georgina Abbott, 48, said, "I'm really looking forward to this year and being able to exceed the amount we did before. I just want to keep going and do as many as possible. I was really proud of our following last year. Lots of local businesses supported us, and this year we've opened up with other charities, like partnering with Homestart, where we're providing stockings for young mums. We hope to get more donations this year to be able to fill more stockings and arrange some more drop-off points around Hampshire. We already have Hampshire Pantry, the Open House Deli, Sasson Edge, and Jake's Toys, which is great. I'm so glad I decided to start it and it's had such good reception, because I've always felt funny about Christmas. I spoil my kids, but I always think about how many people are excluded and miss out, which should never be the case. At the Big Community Sew, fabric and refreshments will be provided, and volunteers are advised to bring a sewing machine. However, for those with little experience, machines will be supplied, and any ability is encouraged to take part. Each handmade stocking will be filled with gifts and given to a child in crisis who might otherwise go without this Christmas. Over the upcoming months, Project Secret Santa will be seeking and collecting donations of toys, toiletries, clothing, books, and other suitable items. And Ms. Abbott will continue to reach out to local businesses and schools for donations to make the Christmas holidays easier for struggling families around the area. More posts, event flyers, and publicity from local shops will appear over the coming weeks as the project gears up for the festive season. And that's accompanied by a photograph of Sally Gott with Project Secret Santa's Georgina Abbott holding some of the stockings that they've made outside a local shop in the High Street.
GP practices online hours. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight GP practices will extend their online appointment hours. Starting from Wednesday, October the 1st, patients will be able to access online services from 8 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., making it easier to contact their GP, describe symptoms, request advice, and manage certain conditions. James Roach, Director of Primary Care and Local Care at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "Our GPs are working harder than ever before and are seeing record numbers of patients each week. By extending the online consultation hours, it will also allow each practice to prioritise those patients needing urgent care. Patients now have options regarding how they contact their GP. Some may prefer to call them, and others may prefer to complete an online consultation, and our GPs are working differently to meet this demand. The move supports the NHS 10-year plan to improve access to community-based care. In addition to longer online consultation hours, Patients can still visit practices in person or contact them by phone during opening times. From October, GP practices will also be required to publish a patient charter on their websites. This will outline what patients can expect from their practice and how they can support the GP team. Keely Ellis, a Deputy Director of Primary Care at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "As well as extending the online consultation hours, we are also asking patients to help support their local GP practice."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting them and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.